So hi Leon, thank you so much for joining me.
Hello Alana, thank you for having me.
So over the past 10 years, you've been doing intensive research into story and what makes it work. So I'm going to start off by asking, what makes stories work?
That's a very good question. Let's start with where stories come from. The origins are buried in the mists of time, but without a storyteller, is there a story? There may be, but it would be very difficult to tell that story. And as soon as you get into storytelling, then you have a reason for a story to be told. No one stands up and tells a story without wanting to persuade, entertain, inform, or pass on information that needs to be remembered. The thing about stories that I found is that they have different structures. This is nothing new. People have written about this. But what I've found that's new is that the different structures relate to different kinds of problems. If you have a problem that you can solve yourself with a little bit of help from your friends, then one story structure unfolds. It's the story structure the three little pigs follow in their little story. They meet the people with the things. Oh, thank you. Yes, I'll have those. Lovely, strong-looking bales of straw. Yeah, thank you. I'll have that wonderful set of planks of wood. Oh, the bricks. If you don't mind me having some, yeah, I'd love to build a brick house. It'd be hard work, but it'll be secure. Yeah, that's the little help from friends. And then they build. Some of them are mistaken in how solid and dependable the materials are, but they end up together in the brick house. And after they've defeated the wolf, because sometimes you need to defeat the things that are getting in the way, they live happily ever after. And the beginning of the story was actually all about them setting up as independent little piggies so that they could look after themselves. That's just one example out of 18 different structures I've found.
Yeah, and I was just about to reference that in your work, you identify 18 types of plot, which are structure neutral, and you abandon the kind of typical tragedy or comedy. Would you like to tell us a bit more about that?
Sure. Let's get the facts straight. I've identified 18 different story structures. Most of them, 16 of them, are what I call linear ones. They involve events that take place through time. Two of them are dynamic ones, and they're more to do with the energy that drives story forwards and how that flows. Comedy and tragedy don't fit into those 18 because I don't think that they are structures themselves in their own right. Comedy and tragedy for me are structure neutral. You can tell any story with any of the 16 linear structures and give it a comic twist or give it a tragic twist. And in my forthcoming book, Story and Structure, I do just that with three structures. I take the structures, I demonstrate how they work in a standard story with a happy ending, and then I show how they can be reworked as tragic format stories.
That's interesting, especially as someone who was kind of the whole tragedy and comedy thing was forced down my throat in college. You were introduced to storytelling from the living oral tradition of Arabian Nights. And this is a tradition I've heard of, but I wouldn't know, be too familiar with. How would you describe this to our listeners?
I'll tell you a story. I'm probably about 11 or 12 years old. That unrestful, boisterous time in a boy's childhood where nothing will keep them still. And it's maths lesson. We hate maths. Now you've got to imagine, this is a classroom in Alexandria, Egypt, where 30 rowdy school kids, it's the worst behaved class in the school. And the maths teacher is off sick. This is a passport to hilarity, merriment, mischief making. It's great. The headmaster, who is an enlightened headmaster and knows every single member of his staff and what their talents are, knows that many of his staff are off sick. There's a bug going around. And this class needs someone with a strong hand to keep them in check, just for 45 minutes. And so he goes off and talks to a lady in a hijab, a headdress, who comes in. And when we see it's the cleaner, we just run riot until she says, "Would you like to hear a story?" And that grabs our attention. Anything's better than doing maths. So she says, "What would you like to hear the story about?" And that's even better, we get to choose. So hands go up all over the classroom and she gets some ideas, a jinn, a princess, an ifrit, and she starts telling a story, improvised with all the characters we've suggested to her. And it makes sense, it's wonderful. And just before the bell goes, 45 minutes into the lesson, she leaves us on a cliffhanger and it's break time. And the world is the same, but it looks different. A year later, she comes in and similar situation where immediately well-behaved. She says, I think I've told you a story before. I say, yes, where did I leave it last time? Now, none of us can remember what we learned either the previous lesson or in the maths lesson the previous week. Everyone, hands up all over the class, says, yes, it was about this, it was about this, it was about this. Okay, fine. And she continues where she left off, improvising this story, leaving us on a cliffhanger 45 minutes later, just before the bell goes. That was my first introduction to an oral tradition of storytelling. It took me decades to find someone who could train me in a similar oral tradition. And the oral tradition bearer I work with is a Jewish storyteller who is, as far as we know, the last living exponent of a tradition that is handed down from grandmother to granddaughter over the generations. There are two Drusillas working in any family at any one time, traditionally. The Drusilla tradition is a tradition that carries around 4,000 stories that are all interconnected. And she carries them in her body, in her bones, in her blood.
Wow, that's incredible. I'd be from a long line of storytellers being Irish, so I can't imagine who it was not to have that in your life and then suddenly being kind of injected with it. But your book, The Unknown Storyteller, comes out later this year. And how did you coin this title?
Well, funny you should ask, because although I love the title, The Unknown Storyteller, and it is what the book is about, the title has changed. The publisher thought it would be more effective if it were called Story and Structure, A Complete Guide. So that's what it's been called. It tells the story of story structure, but it points to a hidden unknown storyteller that has given us this gift of story in all its miraculous, unfathomable, unimaginable, uncommunicable mystery. And that's really what The Unknown Storyteller is about.
And how would you describe the book to someone who hasn't read it?
It's an adventure that will take you through an artistic journey, because the book is filled with over 20 illustrations that take you through a guided journey of how story works by a brilliant artist, Jason Chang, and a very rigorous academic, but not frighteningly academic, I hope, way of looking at story. I say not frighteningly because I've tried to make it very simple. It's based on six simple symbols that are drawn from the work of a guy called George Spencer Brown. Those symbols are used to chart very specific elements of story. We start with openings and closings. The once upon a time, lived happily ever after. That's one symbol. Within those, stories are framed, and stories have a beginning and an end. At the beginning, we meet a character in a particular situation. At the end, we leave the character in a different situation. And there's a different symbol for that. Between the beginning and the end, the opening and the closing, you have different events that go step by step through time. And there are some symbols that show whether the events move the protagonist, the character, forward towards their goal, or hinder them from reaching their goal. Obviously, the positive ones go forward, the negative ones go backwards. In my system, I interpret meetings as backward steps, and there are a few more that you'll meet through the book. But if you can get to grips with the very visually intuitive symbols, where a forward barb or arrow means we're going forward, a backward barb or arrow means we're going backwards, something stopped the character getting in the way, then you can easily feel the heartbeat of story, the ebb and flow that drives it forward, and it starts to come alive in you. And that is, I hope, what people will get from reading the book and engaging with the way it's put forward.
That sounds incredible. Which part of research and language stories and oral traditions is most interesting to you?
It's really to do with the oral traditions and how they work. Every theory of story, every story collection that we have in print has come out of a long history of practice and performance of oral storytelling. The people who wrote rhetoric manuals were people who sat down and listened to people giving speeches. And people giving speeches had been through the school of experience. They knew what worked, and they'd listened to oral storytellers. So it's to do with the practice, not reading about it, but doing it, that's really important.
Who would you name as great literary or even literacy influences?
Oh, so many. I've just come out of a tutorial. I tutor bright children who are going in for competitive exams at fee-paying schools. I also tutor adults. And we've just been working on a passage from Mervyn Peake's Gormenghast, beautiful, gothic, rich tapestry of ideas and images. And that's the thing that comes to mind immediately. I'm reading Dune by Frank Herbert at the moment, beautifully constructed. I love things that use language in order to create complex pictures in my mind. I'm thinking of Jane Stevens, one of your contemporaries.
You're a polymath, writer, editor, tutor, amongst many other strings to your bow. Out of all the projects you've worked on, is there a particular project that stuck out to you as your favourite thus far?
It's always my current project that I'm working on. I've done many things. I have engaged in historic needlework, and I'm the first person in 400 years to rediscover how a very complex embroidery stitch called the plaited braid stitch worked. Very proud of that. I am very proud of my work on story. I've run a contemporary shadow theatre production company. I have performed as a storyteller. And whatever I'm doing at the time is my most favorite thing. I've worked as a vocal coach, repetitor, worked with some top opera singers. I love doing that.
Wow, brilliant. That's a good way to keep motivated when it's your current work. And my last question, Leon, is what future plans are in the pipeline that you're looking forward to?
Well, I would love people to engage with the way I have developed of analyzing story in the book. Story and structure, not the unknown storyteller, but the unknown storyteller is still there as a name for the overarching project. I have a follow-up work in the pipeline where story and structure tells the story of the story that you want to tell, how to structure that, how to get your plan in place. But that's only half the picture. How then do you go about telling your story? How do you use language to bring it alive? How do you change the language according to your purpose, according to your audience? And how can you develop an understanding and appreciation and living connection to the wonderful magic that is language? That's what my second book is about, for mastering the art and craft of writing. At the moment, who knows, it might change, but there you go.
That's great. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.